So on the opening night of the retreat, I spoke about how our time together was feeling a bit like being setting off on a journey. And this metaphor of travel we can see in the Buddha's teaching itself in the Noble Eightfold Path, the path that leads all the way to the deepest freedom. And as with any journey, we're going to encounter different terrain. And again, I mentioned that over the last couple of nights, how at different phases of the journey, we find ourselves sometimes in easy terrain, sometimes in not so easy terrain. Last night, I talked about sukha, the happiness that comes from walking this path. But in order to experience happiness, most of us have to first learn how to navigate those parts of the journey that are not so easy. Metaphorically, you might recognize that I'm talking about the hindrances, the five hindrances that the Buddha identified as particular afflictive energies, you could say, in the mind that get in the way of clear seeing, of insight. This afternoon, as we were exploring the Vedana, the feeling tone, how every sense contact we have automatically registers as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, that this is just a basic biological fact, but then in response to that pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, if there's no mindfulness, we amplify into different forms of wanting, not knowing. And then if there's still no mindfulness, that starts to become even more intensified into greed, hatred, delusion, these three core energies that keep the whole thing spinning. And in terms of the five hindrances, there is a close relationship between the five hindrances and these three core energies. So just as a reminder, or perhaps you can remind me, what have you been experiencing any of these hindrances today? Anyone able to name any of them?
Sloth and torpor.
Sloth and torpor, yes. Very good.
Anxiety and agitation,
yes, restlessness and worry. So those are two imbalances of too much energy or not enough energy. Did I hear doubt over there?
Yes.
Yep, thank you. That's three.
Anger and ill will.
Yes, anger and ill will or aversion. Really? Nobody?
Sadness.
No, that's actually a form of ill will or aversion.
Greed,
thank you, sense desire. Great. So, those are the five. And the problem is, as I said, that they get in the way of clear seeing. But they're also, they put us at risk of harm, of harming not only ourselves, but others too. And according to the suttas, the Buddha is reported to have said that when a practitioner is overcome by the hindrances, it overwhelms awareness and weakens discernment. And then, with that weakened discernment, it's impossible to understand what is for one's own benefit, to understand what is for the benefit of others, and to understand what's for the benefit of both. So this practice of bringing awareness to the hindrances has an ethical aspect to it. It's grounded in that commitment to non-harming that we took on opening night as part of the five training precepts. And if we're serious about this non-harming, we need to really begin to bring awareness to these hindrances and learn how to release them so that the skillful mental states can develop, those mental states that are conducive to sukha, to the happiness that I spoke of last night. So I'd like to, before I read the sutra, I want to make the point that sometimes in the way mindfulness is approached in the West these days, the emphasis is on just be with your experience exactly as it is. Just be with it, just be with it. Don't get involved with it, don't do anything about it. And that is true in insight practice for the first three foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of feeling tone, mindfulness of mind. But when it comes to qualities such as the hindrances, it's no longer just a passive knowing that the hindrances are present. There's an active working to help them release. So working with the hindrances is about more than just recognizing them. I'll read you the actual text from the Satipatthana Sutta. Here, meditators, while sense desire is present in one, a meditator knows there is sense desire present in me. Or, while sense desire is not present in one, one knows there is no sense desire present in me. One also knows how the sense desire which has not yet arisen comes to arise. One knows how the sense desire that has arisen comes to be discarded, and one knows how the discarded sense desire will not arise in the future. So there's a lot in that passage. We need to know, I use just the example of sense desire, it then goes through the other four hindrances with exactly the same pattern. We need to know what causes the hindrances to come up in the first place, how to discard them, and how to stop them from coming up again. Okay? Not easy. And I'm not, don't worry, I'm not going to try and cover all five hindrances tonight, or we could be in for a very long evening. I'm mostly going to be focusing on just the hindrance of sense desire, because a lot of what we'll be saying there will also be relevant for the others. And perhaps if there's time later in the retreat, we might come back to the other hindrances. So, I shared a couple of times now these three questions of what's happening in the body, what's happening in the heart-mind, how am I relating to the experience, as a way of getting a very quick snapshot of what's happening. And this last question, how am I relating to the experience, can reveal whether or not one of these hindrances is present. So we might notice, when we know what's happening in our experience, if there's some kind of wanting, that's the hindrance of sense desire. Is there some kind of resisting or not wanting? That's the hindrance of ill will or aversion. Is there some kind of dullness or fogginess, sloth and torpor? Am I getting all tangled up and agitated about it? Restlessness and worry. Am I going over and over and over with questions that paralyze me? Doubt. So that question can be a very simple way to check for whether one of these five hindrances is present or, unfortunately, sometimes more than one. So we have what's known as the multiple hindrance attack. Because as you may have noticed in your own experience, especially in the first few days of a retreat, these hindrances don't show up nice and politely one at a time. They often sort of gang on each other and one feeds the other, and we end up in this kind of morass. So just to say that the habitual reaction, the unconscious reaction when a hindrance is present, is to meet it with what?
Resistance
or aversion. And that aversion is itself another hindrance, and it just adds fuel to the fire. So often we then get caught in restlessness and worry, and that agitation of the mind eventually saps our energy even further. We sink into sloth and torpor, And then we're easy prey for doubt. Doubt about our capacity to do the teaching, to do the practice. Doubt about the teachings. Doubt about the teacher. So there's many different ways that these hindrances start to interact and compound each other. So recognition that the hindrance is present is key, but so too is noticing how we're relating to the hindrance itself. And just to say, even the word hindrance can trigger this sense, these are wrong, these are bad, they shouldn't be happening. If I was a good meditator, I wouldn't ever be experiencing the hindrances. But the truth is that these hindrances are going to be present with us for a pretty long time. The good news is that over time with practice, they come up less often and with less strength. But even for the Buddha, he was working with the hindrances right up until the night of his awakening. So we need to learn how to develop a more skillful relationship to the hindrances. And for that, there's a training slogan that I really appreciate. I read a few years ago. It's, if it's in the way, it is the way. So if it's in the way, it is the way. So all of those things that we normally think of as being a problem, and if only I wasn't caught up in fantasies all the time, then I'd be able to meditate. If only that irritating person would stop doing that irritating thing, then I'd be able to meditate, and so on. If only the printer would stop adding blank pages to my Dharma talk, then I'd be able to do it properly. If only I could stop obsessing about how I'm going to meet that deadline at work next week, then I'd be able to meditate. So notice all those things that we think are a problem, and see if we can change our relationship so they actually become part of the practice. And because these hindrances are so universal, there's a phrase that the English Dharma teacher Rob Rebeyer uses in relation to them that I found very helpful. He talks about the hindrances as manifestations of our humanity. And it just helps kind of normalize and universalize them. They're not our individual personal failings or shortcomings. They just arise from time to time due to causes and conditions. We don't need to own them, take them personally, but we do want to help them on their way. So this first hindrance, the hindrance of sense desire, as I said, it's rooted in the energy of greed, and it's that movement towards pleasant experiences, the tendency to cling, to hold on, to prolong, going after pleasant sights and smells and tastes and touch and sound and so on. And it's true these pleasant experiences might bring some short-term happiness, but because of the truth of impermanence, the truth that everything changes, eventually they're going to disappear. And then we're left chasing after the next hit of pleasant experience, and then the next, and the next, and the next. And the other shortcoming is, as we were saying in the beginning, they often get us into trouble ethically. Because when we're blinded by greed for something or for someone, we stop seeing other people as fellow human beings. And we're more likely to see them as obstacles that are getting in the way of our happiness, or perhaps as objects that are supposed to make us happy. So we definitely want to take care with this energy of sense desire so that we can manage it in a skillful way. And in going into these different strategies for dealing with sense desire, I'm going to be borrowing an approach developed by one of my teachers, Gil Fronsdal, from his book Unhindered. And he uses the acronym BELLA, B-E-L-L-A, to represent five different strategies that we can apply to these hindrances in order to make them beautiful. So those of you who know Italian, I think bella is the word for beautiful. But before we can even start to apply the strategies, we need to know that the hindrance is there in the first place. And at least for myself, especially in the beginning of my practice, it wasn't usually until quite a way after I'd got caught in some kind of sense desire that I was even able to recognize that that was what had happened. So you've heard me joke before about what I call post-mortem mindfulness. This is often what we need to do after the fact when we realize that something's gone a bit off track. So technically, post-mortem mindfulness isn't actually mindfulness because mindfulness is always in the present moment. It's more of a form of inquiry or investigation. Still, it can be useful if we recognize that something's gone wrong somewhere. We have a sneaking suspicion that maybe we have got caught in sense desire. Then we might choose, in the context of a retreat, to take a meditation session to really explore what happened. So we might recreate the scenario that led to the getting caught and try to really feel in the body as much as possible all the different responses as you recreate that chain reaction that led to the sense desire becoming a problem. And this can give us very useful information about our habitual responses and eventually ways to help them release. So we learn to recognize more and more clearly how this energy of sense desire feels in the body. If you think even now about a time, perhaps today or another time when sense desire was really strong in the body, energetically, how did it feel? Anybody have a sense of that now? Yeah, Wyatt. Agitated in the mind or the body or in the body?
Like kind of jumpy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like there's movement.
Yep. Yep.
It's hard to sit still or hard to keep your mind still.
Hard to sit still, hard to keep the mind still, yeah. Anybody else?
Energetically, did you say?
Yeah, just how it feels in the body or the mind when you're caught in this sense desire. What are the symptoms? Because this is really the key, the first stage.
Excited
in the mind, like zzz, kind of buzzy energy, a buzz. Yeah,
yeah. Like a sort of like a very various stages of a high, I guess.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A buzz, a high,
yeah,
excited,
like a, ooh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Alive, maybe.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Craving,
so like a sense of pulling?
Like, kind of like a feeling of being out of control. Like,
out of control.
Like pulling, like
uh-huh.
A magnet. Like.
Yeah, wow. So being subject to a force that's beyond your control.
It feels that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, yeah. So this is good, you know, this is really the first stage of learning to recognize for ourselves how this energy of sense desire manifests in our bodies, in our hearts, what kind of thoughts are associated with it. And just to say, as I think I mentioned earlier today when we were exploring pleasant feeling tone, sometimes when people hear that sense desire is a hindrance, they have the wrong understanding that that means we should never enjoy anything. We should try and get rid of any pleasant feeling tone, as if that was even possible, because we might get caught in sense desire. But I really want to keep emphasizing that we want to develop a skillful relationship to pleasant feeling tone. And so, as I shared earlier, if we can just appreciate the pleasantness, know how it feels, enjoy it while it's there, and then when it's gone, it's gone. Not a problem. On the other hand, if we start to feel that energetic, yum, more wanting and leading forward and so on, that's when it started to move into the terrain of becoming a hindrance.
When it's compulsive,
yes, thank you. When it starts to pull us literally off center. So I was doing this with my body because for me that's how it feels. I'm not grounded anymore. I'm kind of leaning forward towards something. So when we recognize all of those different manifestations of this energy of the hindrance, for the most part, they feel somewhat unpleasant. Or if it's full-blown addiction, as you were saying, intensely unpleasant. So trying to meet that energy with kindness, with compassion rather than judgment, is really a key. And this is where we come to the first step of Gil Fronsdal's Bella strategy. And B stands for let it be. Just let it be. So he says when a hindrance appears, it's useful to first just let it be. This is not giving into it or intentionally participating with the thinking that it may involve. It means not acting on it, not reacting to it. It's about training to stay present for our experience without being in conflict with it. There's no need to be discouraged, angry, or self-critical when faced with a hindrance. Letting a hindrance be is a practice of finding inner stability and equanimity in the face of destabilizing forces. The practice of letting a hindrance be becomes most effective when combined with clear recognition and acknowledgement of the hindrance. The clearer the recognition, the more we pull ourselves out of the gravitational force of the hindrance, and the greater is our freedom from it. Recognition also ensures our practice is honest and realistic. So the first stage of B is an invitation to just be with it, to ride out the desire instead of giving into it. And at times when I have been able to do this in my own practice, it's showed me quite a fundamental delusion about that's present, I think, in a lot of forms of desire. Usually we think we need to get that thing or that person, we'll call it X, in order to be happy. And so we put all of our energy in trying to get X, the piece of cake or the new car or the dream holiday or the perfect lover or whatever it might be. But because the energy of wanting is inherently unpleasant, what we're actually often seeking is relief from that agitated energy. And we mistake the getting of the thing itself as being what gives us happiness. But it's often the releasing of the agitation of the wanting itself that's actually what we're seeking. So you might notice this with little things, say like eating a bar of chocolate. Have you ever had the experience of getting halfway through and feeling like you don't really want it anymore, but it's kind of there pulling your attention and it's irritating and agitating, so you just end up stuffing it in your mouth to sort of get rid of it. And that's an example of thinking of that, you know, if we really pay attention, we'll feel the agitation of that, the mind being pulled to something. So getting curious about desire can reveal some of the delusions that we have about it. And this is also an aspect of the second letter of Bella, E. E stands for examine. Examine what's really going on. So Gil says, just as spiritual freedom requires wisdom, overcoming the hindrances requires understanding them well. If we know all their guises and their tricks, we're less likely to be fooled by them. We can examine the components of a hindrance It's physical, energetic, emotional, cognitive, and motivational aspects. So as we were saying, strong desire, it might be experienced as leaning forward, for example, or a kind of pressure or rush of restless energy, or pleasant emotions like excitement or eagerness. So there's all different manifestations of this energy of sense desire. And being willing to examine it is what helps us not get caught again in future. But again, I've noticed for myself quite often that when we are caught in sense desire, there can be this tendency towards what I call willful ignorance. I have this niggling feeling that this is probably not very healthy or good for me, or probably is in the terrain of a hindrance, but part of me just goes, no, 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 no. Let me just do it anyway. So I had quite a embarrassing example of this a few years ago when I was living at IMS, the meditation center in the US, and somebody donated to the staff this huge selection of cheesecakes. And I don't know if you know US cheesecakes, but they're usually like really thick and intense and over the top. And I'm not usually that interested in cheesecake, but for some reason on this day, I got myself a big slab of it and kind of wolfed it down. And I thought, well, I'm going to have another one. And this little voice went, really? Is that a good idea? It's like, yeah, I'm going to have another one. So I got another equally big slab of cheesecake and I ate it. And I was about halfway through and I started feeling a little bit bilious. But anyway, I finished it off. And then I was going up back through the dining room to back to work after lunch. And I got back to my desk and realized I had a plate with a third piece of cheesecake on it. It's like, how did that happen? This is an example of complete mindfulness failure. So I had this third piece of cheesecake in front of me and I thought, well, it's there. So kind of like I was saying before, it was the agitation of this thing, and I ate it. And then I sat at my desk, and I could just at first vaguely feel this sense of slight nausea. But by then, my mindfulness was coming back, a little late, but better late than never. And I realized that every time my mind registered this feeling of unease and queasiness, it would kind of go, la, 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 la. Like, that's not really happening. I'm fine. No, really, I'm fine. And so when I saw that, I really made myself pay attention to what was happening in the body and really landed in this kind of greasy, queasy, slimy, churning, burning feeling and this sort of cloying, sickly, sweet residue in my mouth, and then all the shame and the embarrassment and the self-judgment, and really, really let that in. It was hard to do that, but it was really useful because a month or so later, somebody else donated this whole array of desserts, and I just walked past and went, oh yeah, I wasn't even slightly pulled. And it wasn't aversion. There was just a kind of discernment that I don't need to go there. So one small example, and that's not to say I will not ever eat cheesecake again, but I don't think that I'll ever eat three in a row again.
So you pulled yourself entirely into your body to experience those feelings that were associated with the...
Yes. I pulled myself into my body because my mind was trying to override what was happening in my body, and it was really listening to the body more fully that gave me the discernment to recognize that was not a good thing to have done. Does that make sense?
Yep. How did you make the transition?
Exactly. I don't know. Mindfulness, you know, it's the more we can try to keep orienting to mindfulness, the more we can learn our own sneaky habits and get wise to them and eventually step out of them. So obviously in that example, my mindfulness wasn't perfect. I wouldn't have got into that situation in the first place. But at some point, because of training, it did come back online and then I could do something about it. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, after examine, we come to the first L of the Bella strategy, and that is L for lesson, L-E-S-S-E-N. So this is finding ways to lessen its strength. And Gill suggests that relaxing the body and the mind are ways to help lessen the intensity. We can soften the tension in the body that's associated with the hindrance. And if the hindrance is becoming overwhelming, lessening its power might require removing ourselves from situations that reinforce it and putting one's attention somewhere else, somewhere that has a calming effect. So this is a interesting strategy, and I think of it as an example of what in the traditional teachings are known as guarding the sense doors. So in this we're deliberately, and especially on retreat, this is a useful practice to get into. To guard the sense doors means to just not get involved with things that we don't need to get involved with. Or in daily life, for example, if we know we're somewhat addicted to chocolate brownies or something, we don't walk to work past the bakery that's always pumping out chocolate brownie smells. You know, we might choose a different street. So we're just, in a way, protecting ourselves from being too subject to the stimulus. And we can save ourselves a lot of trouble on retreat if we just, you know, there's so many different ways that we can feel our attention get drawn and pulled out and get involved with things. And eventually we realize most of the time we don't actually need to know what that particular meditator is doing right then. We don't need to know whose shoes belong to who. We don't need to know how many bowls of soup that person's taking. It's just none of our business. So to keep guarding the sense doors and come back to our own experience is a powerful protection from getting caught in sense desire or ill will. Another aspect of lessening is to try and temporarily put aside whatever the things are we're addicted to and replace them with a more wholesome kind of pleasure. So for example, if we're addicted to our technology, to our devices, we might choose perhaps once a month to have a technology-free day and go and meet an actual friend and do something in real space instead of online. You might go to an exercise class or spend time volunteering in the community or do things that are a more wholesome kind of pleasure. And so then the second L of Bella is let go, which again sounds very simple. Just let go. And Gill describes it as when we understand a hindrance well enough, often we do just, it lets go. And particularly an aspect of letting go is letting go of the identification with the hindrance, which often keeps it locked in. So we need to see if there's any kind of self-identity around the hindrance that's keeping us stuck in it. So for example, when I use the three slices of cheesecake example, what actually that's partly an answer to your question, Nathan. What helped me to let go was that at least then I was able to not take it too personally. If I'd really been caught in, oh my goodness, I am such a greedy person, I can't believe I did that, how could I have been such a glutton, la da 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 da, that would have kind of amplified and locked the whole thing in place. But because I could see, oh, okay, greed has arisen, I don't know why, but this is how it feels, this is the result, there was a kind of a spaciousness around it.
Also so, space was created.
Yeah, spaciousness of not holding on to it as being me. I'm such a greedy person. Do you feel that sort of contraction? If I'm telling myself that story, I'm owning it and making it mine. Whereas if I can just see, okay, this is the energy of greed, there's a kind of a spaciousness that makes it easier to let go. So this is the second L in the BELA acronym. So non-identification, and just again seeing the hindrances as manifestations of our humanity, that's another way of creating space. And then the last, the letter A, is appreciate. And this is really the invitation to appreciate when the hindrance or the sense desire is absent. So in a way, there's two A's here, appreciate the absence. You may remember that in the Satipatthana Sutta, it said to know when a hindrance is present and to know when it's absent. And again, because of the mind's inbuilt negativity bias, most of us spend a lot more time paying attention to when the hindrances are present than when they're absent. And yet in the service of balance, we want to be able to recognize how does the mind feel, how does the body feel when the hindrance is absent. So right now, you might notice. Let's just take sense desire as an example. Is it present or absent? And to what degree of strength? So if you think of 10 as being like a raging, craving, addiction, sense desire, and 0 being absolutely nothing, on a scale of 0 to 10, how strong is sense desire now? You might just hold up, give yourself a number. Just for fun. I see a 4, I see a 2, a 1, a 2, a 0, a 2. Great. So mostly I'm seeing stuff under 5. So how does it feel right now to know this sense desire is mostly absent? Some sense of ease, I'm guessing. Perhaps relief, gratitude, appreciation,
peaceful,
yeah. So it's good to let that in. You know, usually we're so caught up in wrestling with the hindrances and we can hear a lot of hindrance talks and get the impression that most of this path is going to be one long slog battling with this and overcoming that and dealing with the other. But really let in right now, pretty low. So this is the A of appreciation. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So oftentimes in daily life, especially, I find like if there's a pattern in relationship or with a bar of chocolate or whatever, and you're caught, you've gone down that road, you've started, and then you recognize a hindrance is present, or you recognize you're on territory that's going to be, you know, not good.
Mm-hmm.
Often the momentum of the pattern, like you were saying, it's like you almost have to complete it.
Right.
Is there a way, like at what point, like, is there a way to kind of disentangle yourself when you're in the middle of it?
Is there a way to disentangle when you're in the middle of the grip?
Yeah, when you're in yes. It's not only that you're in the middle, but you like, actually started to engage in it.
Yeah, sure. I wish I could offer an easy answer, but it's really trial and error. And unfortunately, it's kind of a bit like training a puppy or something. We have to kind of make the mistake enough times before, you know, we realize we're going down that pathway again. So, yeah, Kim.
That's just thinking of kind of insight dialogue, pause, relax.
Yeah.
And then skipping a bit to listen deeply.
Uh-huh.
Which is what I occasionally manage to do when I'm sort of started getting caught up in something.
Uh-huh.
And just pause, relax, or be aware of how tense what's going on.
Yeah.
See if it's possible to relax and then listen deeply, which I sort of experience on, you know, the body as well as mind, thought.
Yeah.
And that sometimes frees me to make a different choice.
Beautiful. So pause and relax and then listen deeply to the body can open the possibility of making a different choice. But again, that's partly why I'm saying in the beginning where we probably will be doing a lot of post-mortem mindfulness so that eventually we can find more easily that point where we're just about to go down that same route and take a different one. So do you know that that short poem that's used in AA a lot, the autobiography in 5 chapters? Do you know that one where the person walks down a street, they fall in a hole? Yeah. So that pretty much sums it up. You know, in the beginning, we just keep falling in the hole, but we catch that process with training earlier and earlier, and then eventually we just walk down a different street. Yes. Okay, so that might be the more cynical take on it. Eventually, we run out of holes. Yeah, yeah. So yes, a lot of this, what I think you're pointing to, Wyatt, is in, we do need to have patience and self-forgiveness, and not get hung up on, oh, I can't believe it, I did it again, I'm such a bad meditator, etc. That's all extra.
So going back to what you were saying, it's actually possible that engaging in, if you do the behavior and then you're very like judgmental, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this, I knew in the middle of it that I was doing something wrong,
yeah.
Blah, 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 that can actually reinforce the identification. Which
yes, yes. So the non-identification is key. Because we're not as in control as we'd like to think we are. Otherwise, we'd never have these hindrances. So, you know, these are causes and conditions playing out. And we can recognize them without taking ownership of them. That's really the key.
Did you say before that, when you started and you outlined all the hindrances?
Yes.
Kindness and compassion was your biggest tool.
Yes, one of them.
One of them.
Because kindness and compassion work to cut through the self-judgment.
So if that's just the default setting that you train in.
Yeah. Well, there are two, and I've been framing this whole retreat in terms of two wings, wisdom and compassion. So the wisdom is bringing the discernment to see clearly what happened and how I get caught. That's the clarity.
That's retrospective, though, eh?
Well, sometimes we can catch it in the moment.
Well, in the early days, let's just say we...
Yes, in the early days...
Got training wheels on.
Yes.
You know, we're just being human.
Yes.
It's all good.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first likely syringe to... administer.
Yes.
Will be a dose of self-administered. compassion.
Yes, self-administered kindness and compassion is never wasted. Yeah. So I might just close this part of the talk and then see if there are any other questions you'd like to explore. So I wanted to close with another quote from the suttas, hopefully by way of encouragement. And these are words attributed to the Buddha. And as you hear them, you might like to imagine that he's speaking directly to you, because in a way, he is. He says, "Practitioners, abandon what is unskillful. It is possible to abandon what is unskillful. If it were not possible to abandon what is unskillful, I would not say to you, abandon what is unskillful. But because it is possible, I say to you, abandon what is unskillful. If this abandoning of what is unskillful were conducive to harm and pain, I wouldn't say to you, abandon what is unskillful. But because this abandoning of what is unskillful is conducive to benefit and pleasure, I say to you, abandon what is unskillful. Develop what is skillful, practitioners. It is possible to develop what is skillful. If it were not possible, I would not say to you, develop what is skillful. But because it is possible, I say, develop what is skillful. If this development of what is skillful were conducive to harm and pain, I would not say to you, develop what is skillful. But because this development of what is skillful is conducive to benefit and pleasure, I say to you, develop what is skillful. So may that be true on this retreat. May we all develop what is skillful and experience benefits and pleasure. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.